Proverbs 4. We got to about verses 8 and 9. We actually got a little bit into 10 and 11. But let's go back to 8 and 9 and look at just a couple of points that are made there. Again, wisdom is being personified as a woman. And Solomon's message to his children is exalt her. Exalt her and she'll promote you. She'll bring you honor when you embrace her. She'll place on your head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory she'll deliver to you. Just some of the way that that's worded made me think of 2 Timothy chapter 4. Some of Paul's last words. We talked about those last week in the sermon, but we'll look at them again quickly. Remember, Solomon's idea is if you exalt wisdom, she'll exalt you. It basically is the idea. 2 Timothy 4 verse 8, "Finally there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord the righteous judge will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who have loved His appearing." It's interesting to me to see the comparison. Paul talks about the crown of glory, and here you have Solomon talking about a crown of glory. Now it may be figurative, and I understand that, but if we keep that wisdom, will it give us a crown of glory eventually? Absolutely will. And it's always been that way. Solomon understood that when he was teaching. Paul understood that at the end of his life. We need to understand it as well. Verses 10 through 13 or so. We mentioned how when a father teaches, verses 10 and 11 usually has three parts to it: the instruction, the proper example, and then the correction. And this is just a responsibility. And I say when a father, but it's also grandparents have this responsibility. Aunts and uncles have this responsibility. Older Christians have this responsibility to younger ones. Do we teach our children to love God? Do we teach them that they need Christ, and if they don't have Him, nothing they accomplish in this life will amount to real success? There will be no true success in this life unless they serve the Lord. Do we teach them that? Do we teach them that the Bible is without error? And that if we don't know it, then we're not prepared for this life. And we teach, there's an article that some of you were mentioning earlier, talking about what happens when we die. Do we teach our children that heaven and hell are real places? They're not something made up to just scare kids into acting right. They are real places. And every single one of us will end up in one of those two places for eternity. Do we teach them that? And then after we teach them, do we live like we believe it? Because you can say all the right things, and then your behavior can teach them the exact opposite of what you just said. So do we give them the example that we believe these things, and that we want to spend eternity in heaven? Verses 12 and 13. "When you walk, your steps will not be hindered." This is if we have that godly wisdom. "When you run, you will not stumble. Take firm hold of instruction. Do not let go. Keep her, for she is your life." Take firm hold on the instruction of wisdom. And one of the things that I take from this is don't be hot and cold. Don't be hot 1 minute and you're all over it and you're like, "Yes, yes, Lord, absolutely, I want to do your will." And then the next minute you're just over here. Paul talks about that. Don't be tossed to and fro with every wind of doctrine. Don't be here 1 minute and here. Be grounded. Have a foundation. Be anchored. Wisdom will help us to do that. It'll keep us from getting blown all over the place. It'll keep us from being pulled away by false doctrine. We need to be grounded. We need to have that strength that God's wisdom will give us, that anchor for our souls.
If you have a proper example as parents and grandparents, if you don't show that it's important to you, you will show your kids and grandkids that, you can go if you don't have anything else to do.
And we're going to talk about it somewhat in the next hour. Hypocrites are worthless teachers. Because they can have all the knowledge in the world, but when you do the exact opposite of what you just told me, it is hard for me to respect what you're telling me. Even if it's right. And granted, if it's truth, we should listen to it. But let's be honest, from human emotions, if you got a guy who is telling you, you need to be trustworthy and you need to be diligent and you need to do your work, and he never goes to work, he's the sorriest guy you ever met. Now, how hard is it to take him seriously? Hypocrisy has probably undermined more teaching of the gospel than a great many other things. And that, I think, just going back to the point Steve made, we can teach it all day long, but do we live it? Because that's the teaching that really ingrains it. That makes it real to the ones we're trying to teach. Good. What else? Okay, let's look at the next section. 14 through 17 is really talking about companions, and we see this teaching in the New Testament as well. One of the things I love about Proverbs, look at the word choice here in verses 14 through 17. I'm going to read them slowly. Notice the phrases. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on. Do you think he's trying to make a point? I mean, just look at these phrases. Do not enter. Do not walk. Avoid. Do not travel. Turn away from it and pass on. What is his point?
Flee from it.
Hey, don't give it a chance. Get away from it. Don't go anywhere near it. And if you see it, then you go the other way. Bobby.
Well, I was going to say, don't even try to get close to it.
Yeah.
Because you can't play with it without it affecting you.
Yeah, and we're going to see that later. He's going to use that same mindset in dealing with the seductress. Don't even go near her house. Don't even go down the street where she lives. Don't even put yourself in a position where you could possibly be tempted by it. This is talking about those who do evil, just to finish that section. Verse 16, for they do not sleep unless they have done evil, and their sleep is taken away unless they make someone fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. 1 Corinthians 15:33. If someone could read that one for us. New Testament teaching goes right along with this idea. 1 Corinthians 15:33.
Do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals.
There's an old saying, and I remember my dad saying it, if you lie down with dogs, you will wake up with fleas. It's going to happen. I had no idea what he was talking about when I was little, but it's true. If we are around those who practice wicked things, what's going to happen?
They're going to rub off.
It easily does. And I may have... go ahead, Joe.
I think the great caution that is being presented to us here is be steadfast in being on guard. Worldly behavior. Mother, father, grandmother, grandfather, those are home role models. But the moment you step out the door, you go to work, you go to school, that's when you are stepping into that world that you have got to be able to use that teaching that you got at home. Because it's going to be around you, it's going to be as persuasive as mom and dad are.
Yeah.
Sometimes also, because see, when mom and dad let their guard down, the world is always there to show you the alternative way.
Yeah. You know, and the truth is, we're going to have to be exposed to the world to some extent, because we're going to have to go to work and we're going to have to go to school. I mean, you can't just live in a bubble. But we don't have to spend any more time around wickedness than necessary. And that's where the danger comes. I think I've told you guys before, one of my good friends in high school, he didn't drink, he didn't smoke, he didn't fool around with drugs, he didn't do any of that. A couple years after we graduated, he decided to move an hour away and go to school and live with a group of guys who did all that and more. And I wasn't a Christian at the time, but I knew that was a bad idea. And I talked to him, I said, man, why would you live with them? And he said, no, I'm doing it to be a good influence on them. I believe I can be a good influence on them. There was one of him... three of them plus all of their friends who practically lived there. So there were like 8 people there. Well, guess what happened? After a few months' time, he was drinking, he was smoking, he was taking drugs. This guy who never had touched that stuff. How did that happen? How did it happen?
Association.
Day after day. Just, why don't you come do this with us? Oh, come on, man. You're always telling us how that's not right. Just look, we're fine. Why don't you do this with us? Why don't you do this? Day after... he didn't do it at first. But after 3 or 4 months, every day, seeing it and hearing it and being around it, it broke his armor down. And that's, to me, Maybe that's the biggest fear, is sometimes we can convince ourselves, it won't happen to me. I can be right next to it and I'll be fine. And we can think of examples of people who weren't. They were strong for a while. But you keep letting that stuff just tear away at you, it'll eventually get to you. And this is the warning here. Again, do not enter, do not walk, avoid it, do not travel, turn away, pass on. Nowhere does Solomon say, well, get as close to it as you can and hang out, because you might be able to pull somebody out of it. Just keep sitting right next to it. Leave it. How many examples can we think of? Joseph. What did Joseph do when he was faced with the temptation of lust and sexual immorality? Yeah, he tried to talk at first, and when that didn't work, he ran. Enough of that. Just, he put himself away from it. And we can go and look at other examples as well. But yes, sir.
You know, in 1 Corinthians 15, it certainly applies to worldly, corrupt people. But it also, in the text, is talking about those that are teaching false.
Yes,
it is. They were claiming there was no resurrection. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you think that's okay to be associated with people that are not following God's word, and you're still corrupted, you know, you're still around evil companions.
Yeah, absolutely, that's spiritual corruption, and yeah, that's that permanent death is what that can lead to. That spiritual death. Great point.
I guess also. Practical application of the principle depends upon the person and where you are in your level of maturity. I mean, there are, when young Christians, and I'm talking about young in the Word, they need more time with Christians. More mature Christians that are each and very capable don't need quite as much of that, so then they can be out in the world more teaching than others. So it's dependent upon where you are, and recognition of that is very important, to find the right balance of how much interaction you really, really have to have and need with your brethren, versus also taking the opportunity to be a part of the world, to go out and teach and influence, whether that's, you know, directly through, you know, sharing His word or your example. So it's not an easy thing, but you got to be careful, you know, as you suggest. You know, an immersion in an evil and corrupt environment, I think everyone can see that's an easy thing to take out off the plate. But the practical applications, the other side of it is a little tougher sometimes.
Yeah, we have to teach, and Lord willing, we'll talk about that in the next hour. If you don't teach, we're failing in our purpose as Christians. That we're to teach people the gospel. And to do that, you're going to have to be around them. You're going to have to go to them. Did Jesus spend time with sinners? He absolutely did. He went and he talked to them. One thing we don't notice is that when they decided to be completely given over to sin, and there's just this crazy drinking party and all that, I don't see Jesus there. He goes around them. He exposes himself to them and he teaches them. But when they're not interested in God's word, and you've tried and you've taught, then I don't need to go with them if they're obviously not going to take up the godly things. But we do have to be around the lost if we're ever going to bring anybody to Christ. That, absolutely. And Andy's point too about maturity, that's one of, I love seeing the zeal of those who are first baptized. They are on fire and absolutely ready to save everybody in the world. But you got to be careful, because they may run out to teach somebody and get swallowed up by some false doctrine that they weren't ready for. And that's when those who are older in the faith need to stay with them and help them and make sure they don't get swept away. Because, you know, they've got the zeal, but they don't have the anchor yet. So we've got to make sure. And it is something that we'll get better at with time, Lord willing, and in the experience and the help of our brethren, too. Jeff.
You know, I didn't mean to imply that we as Christians must live in our bubble.
Yeah.
But we have got to be on guard against the world stage.
Yeah.
The hypocrisy you see in government, in big business, it's all around us. And it's so easy for you to take on those habits, because as you may say, well, it's very little I can do about it. This is the way of the world. This is the world we're living in now. It's far more than immoral living, and then of course what the world is teaching us is immoral. But those are the pitfalls that we have got to be on guard against. Those are the real pitfalls. And you find them the day you walk into the workplace, you go into a doctor's office, wherever you travel, that world present is there. And it's more than how you interact with your friends. These are the things that's going to get you if you're not very careful with it.
Yeah. I think we'll see. We'll get there in a second. Verses 24 through 26 give us specific examples of how to prepare for that so you don't go in there blind. Chuck?
Just like they were saying, everybody, for the most part, everybody's got to go out to the world. Everybody's going to have association with worldly things, whether it's school, work, whatever. But you go and you do your business at work. You go and you do your business at school. That does not mean you have to go with a worldly person, go hang out at their house and go do the things that they do. You have to make that separation.
Yeah. And again, some of it's just going to require wisdom. You know, what's the best way I can get to them? And I mentioned my friend completely diving into the middle of their sinful world. That's going to be more danger to me than it is a help for them. So we have to be wise. But can you take opportunities to set up studies? Can you invite them over to your house where a lot of that stuff's not going to be there and show them that you care about them? Show them that you want to spend time with them. You just don't want to be in that. Yeah, I mean, there are ways we can do this. And again, it takes wisdom. It takes probably some making some mistakes on our part to get it right. But we need to look for a way to do that. We can't ignore our responsibilities. And Joe, I don't think anybody took it that you were saying being in a bubble. Your point is absolutely right. When you're separated from... If your family's giving you spiritual strength, you're going to have to be able to stand on your own, or you're going to get sucked right in by everything that the world is offering. Good. Any other thoughts? Really good. Bob?
We know that Christ never did nor said anything wrong, but still he was accused of being a glutton and a wine bibber for being around people trying to teach them.
Yeah. And that hasn't changed. I mean, his enemies were looking for ways to discredit him, and they wanted to do anything to stop his teaching, and that hasn't changed in our time either. Look at the last couple verses of that section there, verses 16 and 17. They do not sleep. This is talking about those who practice evil, unless they have done evil. They just can't even go to sleep at night unless they've done somebody wrong. I mean, that seems kind of crazy to us, but it shows just how eaten up with sin that the heart of this person is. Verse 17, they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. This stuff is their sustenance. It's what they live off of. Just shows us again how completely given over to this way of life they are. And then you've got a comparison or a contrast in verses 18 and 19. But so we know immediately we're changing gears. He's told us about the wicked, but the path of the just is like the shining sun that shines ever brighter unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. So let's talk about the just to begin with. Actually, mark your places and turn to Matthew 7. The path of the just versus the ways of the wicked. Matthew 7, if someone will read 13 and 14 for us, please.
Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go in by it, because the narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are a few who find it.
So there's the choice. And there's a choice that Solomon presents back in Proverbs. It's the same one Jesus presents here. There is the path to light, the path to darkness, and there are only two choices. So we're on one of those paths. The path of the just, back in Proverbs, is like the shining sun. It grows, or it shines ever brighter until the perfect day. I was trying to think about some applications that we could make from it. In 2 Corinthians 4:16, Paul says, "Therefore we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day." You know, it is a reality that our bodies grow weaker with time. and with age, right? We, as we grow, when we're young, of course, we get to that point where we're at our strongest. And then what happens with time? We grow weaker. It's just the way it is. There are things that, as age comes, that we can't do anymore that we used to. But spiritually, you know, you look at, I mean, take a 90-year-old. Can he do what he did when he was 35? Probably not, right? Spiritually speaking, though, the 80-year-old compared to his 40-year-old self, if he has been faithful that whole time, who's stronger? Am I stronger at 80 or at 40 if I've been faithful the whole time, studying the whole time?
Spiritually,
absolutely. I mean, there's no question. There shouldn't be any question. After 40 more years, I should be much, much stronger. My body, it may not be able to do what it used to do, but spiritually, and take that back to what Paul said, even though our outward man is perishing, true statement, you're not going to get around that. That is a fact. Yet the inward man is being renewed day by day, built up, strengthened, as it says in Proverbs, the path of the just is like the shining sun that shines ever brighter until the perfect day. We should be better each day. We should be stronger. And if we're not growing, then something's wrong. Something is not the way it should be. So that spiritual growth always occurs. But what about the wicked? That is a beautiful picture for those of us, and certainly we see, we're getting older, we may say, you know, I can't do what I used to do. But spiritually, I can be stronger than I've ever been. I can help people more than I ever have. What about the wicked in comparison to that? Chuck?
Just like with someone being spiritually strong, the longer that someone evil has, they have more time to come up ways to tear you down.
That seems to go back to verse 16. They can't even go to sleep without thinking of a way to do evil. Notice what's said in verse 19. The way of the wicked is darkness. They don't even know what makes them stumble. So, can you be so caught up in sin and not even realize what's dragging you down? I mean, can you get so caught up and blinded that you don't even realize you're drowning? That's what the verse says. I believe very true. Turn to Ephesians 4. Let's put a New Testament section with this. Ephesians 4. Verse 17. This I say therefore and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart. And it goes on, this is kind of what Chuck mentioned, verse 19, who being past feeling have given themselves over to lewdness, to work all uncleanness with greediness. Being past feeling, and I think, Chuck, correct me if I misapply what you said, but if we keep following that path of wickedness, we get numb to it, right? It gets easier to do wicked because you do it all the time. And it just becomes our habit and our pattern. And that seems to be the warning that Paul's giving here. They did it so long and had no desire to change. It made them numb to it. And go ahead, Chuck.
Well, that's the word desire. It all has to do with desire. It's a desire to follow the Lord, or it's a desire to follow your evil self.
Yeah. That's good. Any other comments? Okay, back in Proverbs, let's look at the... Oh, yeah, go ahead.
It's easy to see the comparison that you use between 40 and 80. Change your numbers a little bit. 40 than I was at 20.
Yeah. I should be. And that's great. Great point. You know, if someone's been a Christian for 10 years, what should they be like in comparison to when they first obeyed the gospel?
Should be.
You know, I mean, let's put it in terms we can understand. What if you practiced basketball for 10 years? You shot basketball every day for 10 years. At the end of that 10 years, should you be better at shooting basketball? I would hope so. Every day you do it over and over again and you practice it and you develop the skills necessary to do it, after 10 years, you should be better. Well, make the application. If I've been a Christian for 10 years, should I be stronger than when I obey the gospel? Hopefully, I'm a lot stronger. Of course, it's going to depend on how much I'm eating, how am I feeding myself spiritually? It's going to depend on how much time I'm spending with brethren and the influence they've had on me, and certainly the study and the effort. That goes back to what Chuck said. The effort that you put in, the desire is the word he used, and that's really what it comes down to. But Steve's right. 40 to 20, there should be a great difference in the strength of our faith by that time. Good.
Lance, and you can go the opposite with that and look at it on a day-by-day basis. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't see the difference from yesterday to today. You say, oh, it's no big deal, so I'm going to skip church, or I'm not going to do that. I'll be fine. You know, I'll go next week. Well, maybe not next week, but the week after. Those little increments also matter. You have got to be diligent.
Absolutely. You know, someone was teaching a lesson on the importance of attendance. And they said that someone asked them a question. They were talking about how important it was to attend every time the saints came together. And someone said, do you remember what the preacher preached on this time a year ago? And the guy said, no. I also don't remember what I ate this time a year ago, but I know if I hadn't eaten, I would have been in trouble. Right? I may not remember every individual thing, but those increments, those little things, day by day, are important. And they're in there. You know, we retain those things and we get stronger. So, good. Good points. Okay, let's look at verse 20. My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart. For they are life to those who find them and health to all their flesh. Again, this idea of don't let God's ways get away from you. Don't leave them. Verse 23 is what I really want to focus on. This is one of those verses from Proverbs that people are familiar with. It's extremely important. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. And then we can just go ahead and look at 24 through 26 to put it with it. Put away from you a deceitful mouth. Put perverse lips far from you. Let your eyes look straight ahead and your eyelids look right before you. Ponder the path of your feet and let all your ways be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Remove your foot from evil. Let's go back at 23 and read it again. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. So let's talk about that. One issue is understanding the importance of a soul. You take away all of our money and all of our homes, and you take away land, and you take away cars, and you take away abilities, and you take away all of those things. Is there still part of us that is there? If you didn't have any of those things, would there still be part of you that exists? That soul is going to be there. It's going to be there for eternity. So all of those things don't define us. The soul is the important part. Jesus talks about it, and the question's fair. You know, what does it profit a man if he gains the entire world and ends up losing his own soul? Obviously, no profit. But this verse, all of the issues of life, where do they come from? Verse 23. They come from the heart. Is my heart something that I can control? Yes, it is. It is. You know, there are those who might suggest, no, well, you just have to do what you have to do. And I can control my heart. I can control what I put into it, which will control what comes out. Look at, if someone will turn to Matthew 15 and read verse 18 for us. Matthew 15, verse 18.
What comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, and this defiles the person.
Those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and this is that which defiles a man. If our heart is pure, what will our life be like?
Pure, also pure.
Yeah, you'll chase after pure things. You will act in ways that are pure. If our heart is corrupt, what will our life be like? It'll be filled with that darkness. Let's look at some specific ways now in 24 through 26 that show us how to guard, or rather how to keep our hearts. First one in verse 24 is by guarding our lips. Put away from you a deceitful mouth, put perverse lips far from you. If we speak deceitfully, if, you know, lies come to us just as sure as regular conversation comes to someone else, what does that suggest about my heart? Yeah, it's not right. It is full of that filth. And just, this is a side note with that. Profanity is a hard habit to break. And I'm not saying that it cannot be broken. It can. But let me just suggest it. If we cram that stuff into our heads when we're young, you're going to struggle getting rid of it. You can get rid of it. You can put it away. But especially for those here who are younger, don't expose yourself to that stuff. Don't suck it in and then think, well, I can just be around it and it'll be okay. And certainly don't be tempted to start using it. It is hard to get rid of that stuff. You know, I never had a filter over what came out of my mouth when I was 16, 17. And now, even now, there are times where you have to catch yourself. Because that stuff, you think it's long, beaten down and gone, and it'll come. Don't expose yourself to that stuff. It's much easier to never get it in than to have to clean it back out. And I guess that can be said for any sin, but especially with this verse, profanity sort of stood out in my mind. We make good habits the same way that we make bad habits, by repetition and by exposure to good things. So let's focus on those things. Verse 25 talks about the eyes. Let your eyes look straight ahead and your eyelids look right before you. I think of what Job said. He made a covenant with his eyes. I will not look upon a young woman. Right? That he made sure that he didn't look upon things that might lead to be temptations or lead him astray. Any comments?
Chuck? Like a blinders on a horse. You need to focus on going, getting to heaven, not focus on the evils of the world around you.
Yeah. Bob?
The thing that we get hooked on when we are young, like nicotine, they destroy our bodies. And I've seen people struggle with that.
Yeah.
Even when they got older, they couldn't wait to go smoke.
Yeah, and I've seen good brethren who struggled with it. And they struggled. You know, some people say, well, I struggle with it, but they don't really put up a fight. There are brethren who struggle with it. And it's hard. And it, you know, years after, even if they manage to put it away, it's taken a toll on them, and it's made it harder for them to do what they would like to do. And so these decisions we make when we're young, they do follow us. We need to make wise decisions when we're young. And when you're young, ironically, you think you're invincible, so you're not going to have to worry about these things. You know, I remember my parents telling me, look, if you don't spend that much time outside, you need to wear sunscreen. And I thought, please. You see how nice and tan and brown I am? Why would I want to mess that up? And then, you know, you get close to 40, and I got all these spots on my arm. Where did they come from? Well, hard head. That's where they came from. And, you know, that's a minor example, but we think this stuff doesn't apply to us when we're 17, 18, 22, 25. You're not always going to be 17, and these things do affect us. So make good decisions now. Is my point there. Bob.
As I talked with a man that had emphysema, he said he had stopped smoking for 15 years and still chronic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 26, ponder the path of your feet and let all your ways be established. Guard your feet. You know, pay attention to where you go. Don't go places that will put extra temptation on you. If there's no need to be there, then I don't need to be there. Be careful where we allow our feet to take us. Would this apply in where we go on vacation? Could you make applications from it? You know, if I'm striving to be faithful, you know, do I need to go on vacation and plop down in the middle of a beach where everybody's naked? Or practically so? Yeah, I can avoid temptation by making good decisions. What decisions do I make? Where do I go? Keep your hearts, for out of it spring all the issues of life. Very, very important lesson for us. Okay, that'll finish chapter 4. We'll start in 5. Any comments? Chuck?
Be careful of the enticing. You mentioned the vacations. The world entices really hard in that direction. Not only with the beach stuff I'm sure everybody has seen the commercials of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Yeah. No, that's not necessarily true. Yeah, you may have done something in Vegas, but the damage has done, been done to your soul. You will carry that through eternity.
Yeah, and in any consequences that follow with it, they're very real. Yeah. Keep your hearts.
I'm just going to go back to the eyes. We were talking about be careful about what you see. If you look, you know, like in my mom's generation, I hear talking about when she would watch movies, what was allowed on television, you know, it was nothing compared to what's allowed now. Mm-hmm. And we don't think about it. When we're watching something on TV, we become immune almost to what we're seeing because we've been seeing it a whole life. You have to really be careful what you allow yourself to see because you're training your mind. This is okay.
Absolutely.
Because every time you see it, there's no alarm going off.
Yeah.
Because you've been watching it for years.
You're numb. You're numb to it now. As I think of a brother in Christ who mentioned he saw pornography when he was, and this is a guy brought up in a godly household. He saw pornography when he was 12, and he said it messed him up. You know, he struggled through high school and college, and even early in his marriage because just that exposure to it just had a terrible effect on him, and he carried it with him. So, does it matter what we let in? Very much does. And we need to be careful about these things. Good. Thank you, Angel. Good point. Norm.
No, I was just coming to think about, you know, when we first started the chapter, we were talking about wisdom. And, you know, it seemed like I found out in the world, everybody looking for a friend, you know. And we think, you know, we don't realize sometimes, young or old, how what a friend is. But, you know, the Bible talks about wisdom is our friend. We stick close to wisdom. And understanding, you know, it seems like we always need another human being or person to be our friend, our guide. But if we stick to the scriptures and let that be our guide and our wisdom and understanding. But we seem to always, I see it at the great places, and places, we always just want some person that to be our friend. And you know, we can trust wisdom and understanding. Sometimes the people we just can't trust.
Yeah. You know, and hopefully, if we are given the wisdom, we'll look for those to associate with who are also chasing after the same thing. So then you get both. You get wisdom and you get wise friends that'll help keep you out of this stuff. And I think that's the goal that we want there. You know, Ecclesiastes 4, that idea about, you know, two are better than one if they're both godly and if they're chasing after good things. But Norris's point's right. Wisdom is, remember what it said earlier? Same chapter. Let's see.
Verse 7 said, wisdom is the principal. Yeah, it says, love her and she will keep you, and wisdom is the principal thing.
That's it.
Therefore, get wisdom, and in all you get, and get understanding.
That's the verse I was looking for. Wisdom is the principal thing. That's number. You get that right. And then your other decisions will come from that. They'll be wise decisions. Good. Chuck, you have a comment too?
Well, not only we've been looking more or less toward how it would affect our souls, being, you know, associating with the world and going in those directions. What about the person that you have been talking to, spiritually speaking, and they see you going to one of these, like a bar or whatever else? How does that affect them? Because then they see, okay, this person's trying to teach me doctrine, and look what they're doing. So not only does the action that you do affect you and your soul, but it also affects those around you, even though you may not even realize they've seen you.
Sure it does. Yeah, absolutely. Jen?
Going back to what Angela was saying, like just all the TV stuff, I've even had to sit down and watch some of the cartoons and stuff that they show on Disney and with Caitlin, because there have been some things that I'm like, you know, when I was a kid, there was no way they would have shown that. And just in that generation, there has been so much more that is now acceptable.
Yeah.
That it's just, I mean, not only is the stuff that, you know, we watch that we have to be careful about, but things that we, you know, there's a lot of times Caitlin sits in one room, watches something while I'm working. We really have to watch what our kids are seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. I can think of one example that animated, I mean, cartoons and things now are showing the idea that it's okay to have two daddies or two mommies. And what is it? What is it pushing? Of course it is, and that's not accidental. I mean, but it's subtle. And if you teach that to a 5-year-old. If they're not getting taught truth, what are they going to think?
It's okay.
And then what's going to happen a generation from now? All of them are going to think it's okay. And then when you try to teach truth, now how could you say that? And so it's Satan knows what he's doing. And he's very, very good at it. He's very subtle. He's very talented. And he's patient. He waits. Would this have worked for Satan 50 years ago in this country? Using TV like that, and not blatantly like that, but did he sneak a little bit in?
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened? A little more, a little more, a little more. And he knows what he's doing. And Jen's right, we better be on guard. Don't think anything's safe. You know. Good. Okay, well, let's start chapter 5. We've got a couple minutes, and let's just talk a little bit about this next section over these few chapters. It's really going to be about choices. Solomon is trying to warn his son here, make godly choices instead of wicked ones, and we've seen that. But if you put with that Galatians 6, let's turn there. Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 and 8. This lesson that it's one of those that comes up in just about everything that we study because it's applicable to everything. Galatians 6, if someone read verses 7 and 8 for us.
Do not be deceived, God is not mocked. For whatever one sows, that will he also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life.
And some of you guys have made comments along those lines. The idea of if you sow to your flesh, you'll reap fleshly things. If you sow to spiritual things, then you'll reap spiritual things. That same idea that Paul is teaching there, Solomon is also teaching in Proverbs. And we're going to see a lot of different examples. Choices. It is interesting to me when you study with someone who promotes Calvinism that basically says you don't have any choice. You are predestined to either you are or you aren't, and you can make no choice to change that. That goes completely against what the Bible teaches in so many places. What about Joshua 24 when he's standing there before the people? He's about to die. What does he tell them? Verse 15.
Choose yourself.
Man, you think there's such a thing as choice? Choose you this day. Who are you going to serve? Are you going to serve the gods on the other side of the river that your fathers served while they were over there? Or are you going to serve the Lord? You choose this day. But I tell you what I'm doing. As for me and my house, we're serving the Lord. He made his choice. And he told all the Israelites there, you're going to have to make your choice too. What will it be? The devil made me do it. Is that true? He may have suggested it really hard. And he may have provided me with some great opportunities, but did he make me do it? He can't. The days of demon possession are over. They served their purpose to show the power of Christ and how it was greater than that. Those days, of where under the control of an evil spirit, if I choose to sin, well, let's say it this way. If I sin, who made the decision?
You did.
I did. And who made the opportunities for it to happen? Maybe Satan to some extent provided me with opportunities, but who made the decision? Me. And I've got to come to that realization, or I'll never serve the Lord. I'll never truly repent until I realize that it's on my shoulders, the blame for that. Matthew.
Yeah, you can put that with Romans 8:38. For I am persuaded that neither death nor life nor angels nor principalities nor powers nor things of this presence or anything to come, nor heights nor anything else created, shall be able to separate us from the love of God. That's including all of creation, except the one thing that's not included in there is you.
Yeah.
You can separate yourself from the love of God.
Absolutely. Great point. Great point. Good. That's a good one to stop on. And we'll close there, and we'll pick up with chapter 5, Lord willing, next Sunday. Thank you for the comments very much.